everybody. This is Mark Chaffardini with Go See Talk. We have an extra special guest this afternoon. We have Remy Van Kesteren, who is a fantastic harp player. We're going to talk about The Red Turtle, his alternative soundtrack to the Studio Ghibli. Is it Studio Ghibli or Studio Ponoc?
Ghibli, yeah.
Ghibli, perfect. We love Ghibli here, big fans of it, and excited to talk to you, Remy, about your impressive string work. Before we dive into the album, let's get to know you a little bit better. What about the harp made that your instrument? Did you hear a wicked harp solo in a symphony hall, or did you love Harpo Marx in Day at the Races?
I was about 5 years old, and my mom, she used to play the flute, and she played a lot of Irish music. And one day she went to play with a friend, and I just went along to play in the garden, sit on the swing. And while I was on the swing, suddenly I heard, well, I heard my mom playing, but then I also heard this other sound that sounded familiar to me, but I didn't know what it was. It was a harp. Anyway, it made me jump off the swing and sort of run upstairs. And there I saw the instrument for the first time, and not only hearing it, but also like seeing it. It's quite impressive. It's big, especially when you're that little.
Sure.
So, yeah, I was totally mesmerized by the instrument and enchanted, and I was determined it should be my instrument.
Gotcha. Well, do they have a five-year-old harp, or do you have to learn on the larger modules?
Well, in fact, I learned on the Irish, the Celtic harp, they'd say, or the small harp, some call it, which is they have them in various sizes, so it's a lot smaller than the concert grand harp that you would see in an orchestra. So it's also sort of manageable for a five-year-old.
Well, I watched a video of you. It was one of your videos, and you're playing sort of on this stone wall in the beautiful backdrop. And it's just, tell me the logistics. How do you travel with a harp that size? Do you have a team? Do you have an entourage?
Well, I wish I'd have people carrying it for me. I mean, I do have, when I'm on the road, I work with technicians, but they don't dare to touch the harp, actually. So that's mostly on me. You can sort of take it in any car as long as you're creative. So I remember being a student, not having my own car. So I would have to fit it in all small, especially here in Europe, we have very small cars. But remarkably, it fits in almost any car, and it's not as heavy as you may expect. It's not as heavy as a piano, for example. Mm-hmm. So you can sort of carry it around. And here in Amsterdam, I used to live up 3 stories high, so I'd have to carry it up through the narrow stairs. And even that was possible, even though I had to do that like 4 times a week. But fortunately, now I live ground floors. I did learn from that.
Much easier. Does, you know, I brought up the Marx Brothers earlier, and Harpo has this great scene in Day at the Races where he's playing a piano and the piano breaks and he starts playing the harp. And when I saw that when I was younger, it just blew my mind that basically piano is a harp. Is that the misconception? Is that true? Is it easy to carry over? And how many other instruments have you learned to play over the years?
I have learned a few other instruments. It's definitely a different instrument. You could say the harp was maybe a predecessor of the piano. Harp is one of the oldest instruments we know, together with the flute and percussion. It's been said that it's originated from hunting. So there was a hunter, and he was shooting his bow and arrow, and while the bow was still ringing, he thought, oh, maybe there's music to it, and so he stopped hunting and he started to make more strings to his bow, and that was actually the first harp. And you can see. Yeah, you can see that shape still in the current instrument. And if you put it down, it's sort of a piano. But that's as far as the comparison goes, because of course piano has keys and it has a whole different mechanism. A lot of people expect me to play guitar because it seems related, but it's entirely different technique, and the way of playing is really yeah, quite not like the harp. I did learn to play it a little bit, but I wouldn't call myself a guitarist or a pianist. I mean, I play the harp, but I started to write my own repertoire 4 years ago, and since then I've learned a lot about producing my own music and also using electronics, which is a lot of fun because it has not really been done with the harp. So you're pretty soon on new territory and creating new sounds, which I really enjoy.
Excellent. And you know, that's one of the things that I wanted to get into when we start talking about the Red Turtle, is how when your agents pitched me the interview and I listened to the album, it's fantastic, but I just couldn't believe that it was all harps. I mean, it sounds like there's more to it. It's distortion, it's reverb, it's some things that are added to it. So I'd like to kind of get your, you know, this mix that you're discussing about how you're adding electronics to, you know, this album and just, you know, your interest. Where did that, the electronics come in to play?
I like to see how to enhance the sound of the instrument or make it sound, that you even doubt whether it's a harp. In this case, we used some tube delays. So basically guitar effects or what people would use on their synthesizer or whatever. And experiment with that and see how you can make the sound even richer. And sort of play with what I really love is the organic and beautiful sound of the instrument that it has. But I also like to look for a more rawer and maybe more real or maybe more human sound in a way. Mm-hmm. And I find that the electronics sometimes can give this edge to the sound that I really enjoy. It makes it. Yeah, it makes it into something a little bit less dreamy. I mean, it still is a magical or dreamy instrument, you could say, but it gives it a little bit more edge. So I like to experiment with that. And for this record, that's definitely for every track I've been looking for the right combination of effects amps and whatnot and loops. I use quite a bit of loops, just like the guitarists, they would loop themselves. I always was inspired by that, and I thought, well, why not do that with the harp? So that was also on the basis of some of the tracks on the album.
I did notice some loops, at least that was my perception of it. There's one track, I think it's Nowhere Left to Run. It kind of dances between really heavy strings and really light string work, and I think mm-hmm. that you get some real dense plucks and some reverb, but I don't know if it's the light or the darker string tones that one loops while the other kind of goes on a solo and they just kind of dance between each other. It gives it some more dynamism.
Well, the funny thing is that particular track is actually just, I kind of like that you think it's a loop because it's all me at the same time. So it's really? Also, it also shows the versatility of the instrument. It can be really, it's very dynamic. So it can be really broad and big and even sounding even like a distortion, which is actually really the instrument itself. So that's not an effect. And at the same time, be very subtle and small and petite. So I remember getting into effects and electronics, and at first sort of putting every effect I could imagine on the harp. And then the more that I play, I try to sort of get those effects in the playing itself. So mm-hmm. I get inspired by those sounds, and then I try to go back to the instrument and see if I can actually create those sounds with my hands. So in fact, that's not a track with loops. Another one, which is April. So that is like six or seven layers of harps on top of each other to create a sort of orchestra of harps, you could say.
Gotcha. It gives it a much more full-bodied tone as opposed to just one instrument doing exactly. its runs. Well, you know, let's jump into it then. You know, I saw The Red Turtle in 2016 when it came to a film festival here in Texas, and it was just so mesmerizing and captivating, but I... And the imagery really stuck with me, but I never really thought of the music. And then along comes this album. So, you know, let's talk about your relationship with the director and what made you just say, let's try an alternative soundtrack.
A lot of people who know my music, they've been coming to me and it's, those who enjoyed it came to me and they said, well, it reminds us of film music. So you should get into film music, you should score a movie. And I was like, yeah, I would like that. But so far, I wasn't called by a director. So I sort of thought I can also take matters in my own hand and find a movie that I really like and then see if I'll get permission to make new music to it. So with the idea to actually, not necessarily to make an album, but to play it live in the cinema. That's just something that I thought would be really neat to be like they used to do with the silent movies. So you are there in the cinema and you're actually scoring it on the spot. And that's when I thought of the Red Turtle, because it has, of course, there's no speech. There's very little sounds. There is in the original beautiful soundtrack by Laurent Perez de Mar. I don't know, it inspired me. I had so many ideas to what I'd like to do with the movie. And then I got in touch with the director and I was quite scared for that, because I thought, maybe he's going to be angry, you know, because it's a finished product. And here I am and saying, hey, can I make a new score? But in fact, he was super open to the idea and got excited right away. And we got into this lengthy phone conversation and started writing each other emails. So it almost became a sort of friendship. And after that, I just started writing. And I think I've never wrote songs that fast. So like in three weeks later, I had 90 minutes of music, which is way too much for the for the movie. But I was just inspired by him, and by it just fascinates me, the relationship between imagery and music, and how music can enhance certain images, or sometimes contradict it, or evoke certain emotions. It's just fascinating how the interplay of the two goes, and how it also can sometimes really not work, and then other times it just totally enhances each other. And it's just been really fun to dive into that and work with such a beautiful, I mean, all the images are incredible, and they evoke so much. So you don't have to do so much, actually, as a composer, in a way.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about it, I was reading the press notes and the liner notes, and it said that the inspiration was actually nature. That's what you wanted to focus on. So aside from, you know, the name Red Turtle, a lot of it just feels like you're walking through these bamboo forests. And, well, aside from the track walking across the Atlantic, there's not a lot of water in this. So what was the inspiration behind focusing on the nature part of it?
Well, I don't know if all the listeners know the story, but it's about a man on a deserted island, sort of castaway, the classical castaway story. He wants to get off the island, but he's unable to, because he's held back by this turtle. But the forces of the nature are what's stuck with me. So it's a desolated island. We sometimes have very romantic ideas of this, but it's not romantic at all. It's actually quite what's the right word? Hostile. It's not a nice environment at all, in a way. Not a lot of things grow on the island. There's a lot of, there's rain, there's a storm, even a tsunami. So he has to endure a lot, and mostly all the forces of nature. So they actually, the nature forces him in different, force him in different directions, you could say. So I thought it would be nice to let the music sort of follow those big natural forces as a sort of starting point to start writing music for this score.
Talk to me about some of your favorite tracks. I think the ones that really spoke to me are Nowhere Left to Run, Walking Across the Atlantic, and the last one, A Minor Lament. And I have reasons why I like them, but please tell me some of your favorite tracks. And
well, I love your picks. Definitely Nowhere Left to Run would be one of mine as well. And the final track is also dear to me. It's a sort of layman's. It's also sort of looking back. It will also be the track that would be at the end credits, the final credits. And another one, the track opens with Amber, which is sort of one of the lead motives, you could say, in my version of the score. It's funny because I was writing in my studio at home, because of course everyone is at home, and so I was just playing the movie over and over, like night after night, and just improvising at first. That's how most of the score originated. And I'm just recording whatever I was doing, listening back, throwing away 95%, and then some bits remained or kept coming back. That's sort of how those tracks originated. And with every, I also tried, because it's a big, there were big limitations, because my latest record I produced with 15 different musicians and a lot of technique, etc. But here I thought, in the end, I will have to be able to play it in the cinema with just me. So the limitation of being just on your own as a harpist, and then trying to, get almost something like an orchestral score from just a harp, was quite a daunting challenge. And so that's what I really tried with some of the tracks, to really get out different characters or stretch the full limit of the instrument, and get all the details out that were possible. So those tracks that you mentioned, and I think sort of give this scope of what the instrument can do. So, yeah.
Well, I think it definitely achieved that, because as soon as I hit play on Amber, I was probably 20 seconds in, and I just thought, wow, I'm so mystified and intrigued that I just have to speak to you. So I just told your agent, I said, yes, let's do this.
Awesome.
And I think one of the interesting things, the most interesting thing about this album is that, you know, your struggle to create, your process actually kind of rivals the protagonist's, you know, journey through the island, you know, trying to survive. And so it's kind of funny the parallels that you two went through, although you probably never got rained on or by a monsoon.
That's right. I did have leakage in my studio, so maybe even there is parallels.
Life mirrors art, and vice versa, right? Well, you know, I spoke to Joseph Trapanese, who scored the alternate track to The Raid a couple of years ago, Gareth Evans, sorry if I butcher it. But his approach and Mike Shinoda's approach was they did not want to listen to the original score to The Raid. Didn't want to influence them. So what was your take on this, and how did how did those discussions with the director go?
That was a challenge, because I mean I really like the original score, and it's really a full orchestral score. So it's he used the entire orchestra, and it was very interesting for me to learn. I mean, that was mostly my take on this project to begin with. I wanted to learn how a director works with a composer. So I asked him about their process and how they would handle things, and why would a composer choose to do certain things, or where did he, you know, not listen to the director, and where did he? And so we did talk about it a lot, but then I decided indeed to not listen to the original score too much. And of course, sometimes I couldn't help myself and I played one of the tracks and I thought, it's like, because like writing music is such an insecure and personal project, so it's so easy to, yeah, you go like, your mood goes like this. Some moments you're like, oh, I'm really on the right track, and other moments like, oh no, this is terrible. And then those, of course, are the moments that you would listen to the original score, and that will usually make you want to stop altogether. But yeah, in the end, I had the discipline to not listen to the original score anymore and just make my own work. And that was necessary to finish it. And it's just a different thing. It also, it's not like that was always important for me from the beginning. It's not about that I think I could do a better job. It's totally not at all the case. It's really seeing what it would bring me and where it would take me and what choices would I make. And I am really curious to hear later when I play it in the cinemas what people think of it and how they see the differences, or but it's really yeah, it feels like a sort of dialogue that I'm going into with the original, and it's just something new. At least for me, it's been a fascinating journey.
Well, you've got me fascinated. So when do you plan to be in the symphony, or when do you plan to be in a cinema? When can we see you live?
Well, that was going to happen in 2 weeks at the end of October. The shows were sold out, but here happened, we are in our second wave here in the Netherlands of the COVID situation. Mm. Yay. So so everything is postponed to April. So hopefully we'll be able to do it then. And we're not in the third wave by that time, but we'll see. Anyway, yeah, hopefully it will happen in April. And then I don't know. At least the record will be out in a few weeks, so people can already have their own images and imagine what music would be underneath which scene.
Gotcha. Well, I've got mine pre-ordered, so as soon as that ships out, I'll be spinning it on my own.
Sweet.
Let's talk about the artwork and the packaging. How much input did you have, and what did you contribute to the the artwork or the liner notes, things like that?
Well, in fact, so this cinema performance was planned. So that was planned to first happen earlier. So it was already postponed because of COVID. But then this was scheduled for for the end of October. And then the music was done. And for me, that was sort of, I thought that was going to be it. And then my manager, she sent it to a label. And she contacted me, and she was like, I think there's an album to it. I think, and the label is excited, so let's go for it. And I was like, okay, sure. When should it be finished? And it's like, well, in 3 weeks. So that was a bit of a shock. And I was going to tell her she was crazy. And I was also going to say, like, it's impossible. It had to be finished in 3 weeks for the vinyl to be in time for the release. And then I thought about it like for the rest of the day. And then I thought, okay, there's one reason when I would do it. And that's if the director would agree to draw the artwork of the album. So I called him and I asked if he would be up for it. And he takes a long time for drawing, so I thought it was going to be an impossible thing, but that would at least give me ammunition to say to my manager, well, he can't do it, so I can do it. But then he said yes, so then I sort of, yeah, had to make the album, and got it to work, and then he sent me the beautiful sketches he made for the film, which are inside of the artwork, and yeah, then I made it with the designer. We made the plan for how it should look, and then of course thought it would be nice to have the red vinyl and the red CD. as a link, of course, to the name. So yeah, I was quite closely connected to it, and also with the director, we sent things back and forth, and in the end got to the end result that I'm really excited about. I think it looks gorgeous, especially the big vinyl is so nice to have in your hands. And he even made a drawing of the harp in the bamboo forest, which is also in the inside of the artwork. So yeah, that was actually that's one of the most beautiful things to the project, is that I got even his art. So it's sort of, I don't know, he was inspired again by what I made, and that's the beauty of art, isn't it? Like if you share and then you get things back that you would never expect. So
excellent, great story, great keepsake to have from this. You know, now that we're sort of at the end of the interview, where can people find you, Remy? And of the concerts that have been postponed, have any more tickets opened up in light of the cancellation, or have you thought about taking a stateside tour?
Yeah, the problem of touring abroad, of course, now is that everything is very insecure. I used to play quite a bit, also in the States, but at the moment, everyone is sort of awaiting the situation, how things will go. I am playing. We're now only allowed to play up to 30 people inside, so I'm wow. doing some small gigs now and then, but yeah, it's all very limited. Also, I'm becoming a father next month.
Oh, so, wow. Congratulations!
Yeah, thanks. So, with my first baby girl, so that's also going to be definitely a change. So, I also want to take some time for that. But then I will tour again in the beginning of next year, from February, first just in the Netherlands, but hopefully soon also out into the world again.
Okay, so for now it's digitally. Next year it'll be physically. That sounds great. We'll get to see you. Do you have a website you would like to plug, or you want to Instagram,
sure.
Twitter, things like that?
Yeah, people are most welcome to follow me on Instagram. Just my name, Remy, with a Y, V Kesteren, or vankesteren.com. Is the website.
Okay. Well, let's just get back into vinyl, because that's something, you know, I can't wait to spin this release. My friend Brian got me into records about 6 years ago. What are some of the most exciting albums you have or you like to spin, and how? When did you become a vinyl advocate?
Well, I like the process and just the taking really good time for music. I mean, you kind of have to, because you have to actually put it on physically. I think we all know now with the digital time, every music is you can play right away, and we have to be careful that music doesn't become something, or actually sometimes it already has become something we take for granted. There's just always music, which is so normal for us, but it used to be so different. Like in the past, of course, there was only music if it was actually played. And I think playing a vinyl record sort of brings you back to that. So you have to be very, it's only 20, 25 minutes for each side. So it's a conscious thing you have to do. And it just makes you appreciate the music, more, I guess. Although I also still listen to CDs in the car, but I'm really old school. But some of my favorite vinyls, I listen to so much different music. I love modern bands like our artists like James Blake or Bon Iver. I listen a lot to those. Radiohead, of course, is a favorite. And one record, one vinyl record that I think of now is from Lara Mvula, a difficult name to pronounce. I don't know if you know her, but she's an incredible British jazz singer, jazz pop, I don't know how to call it, but the record is called Sing to the Moon, and I can listen to that all night long. It's really nice, beautiful, soulful record. So those are just some that pops in my head right now. But I also enjoy Fela Kuti, African music, which is not so well known maybe. but I love those African rhythms and that raw energy and drive that's in that music. Yeah, just to name a few, those are the things I like to listen to.
Excellent. Well, I'll throw this in the end of the post. Some good recommendations for myself and our readers and listeners to check out. Final question for you. Again, congratulations infinitely on the record, but more importantly, your daughter, your little red turtle. what are if you could pick five albums to kind of tell her who you are, or maybe, you know, get her into music? They don't have to be highbrow. They don't have to be as, you know, as expected as maybe Radiohead, but what are five things you're excited to share with her?
Ooh, wow. Yeah, I think in the first few years it will be different.
Sure.
It'll be more simple songs. That's something I would have to think about a little bit longer, I guess. I haven't really thought about that. Yeah. I guess I would just love to show her everything, of course, but just a large scope of what's out there. I mean, I was trained in classical music, so I have a big background in that. I know a lot of that music, and it took time for me to get into the classical music and to learn how to appreciate it. But I couldn't imagine my life without it. So I would definitely play a great composer that I love, like Debussy, Shostakovich, Stravinsky, Beethoven. There's so much there that I would love to play for, which is also soothing and nice, also for a little baby, I guess. And then when she gets older, I would love her also to listen to the more experimental stuff. As I mentioned, James Blake and Bon Iver, those latest records, I think are really, really cool and challenging. I would play Miles Davis to her. just to show how you can keep, you know, refining yourself and refining your voice in music and keep developing yourself. There's so much music. There's too much music to listen to.
No arguments there, Remy. No arguments there. Well, take good care of yourself. Check out The Red Turtle from Snowstar Records. Get it on Bandcamp or Snowstar's website. But please follow Remy and make sure his daughter has some diapers, everybody. Thanks for your time, Remy.
Thanks so much.